Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat, also here.
This is our favorite day of the week. We're taping our 2 hours together, chef.
That's right.
It's nice to see you again. Your
as
chef
well.
O is adorable today.
Oh, well, it gets wet, it gets dry, it gets moist. I don't know. I don't think it knows what to do anymore.
I bet it gets a little smoky sometimes,
smoky, too. It smells really good.
We're here with you every week for 2 hours. We're thrilled to be here, and we're going to get rolling on a very large show. So if you want to continue to listen to us on the radio, or if you're going to miss something and we are just something you can't afford to miss, just go online, listen to us on our on your favorite podcast app.
That's right. Okay. I think that's really cool, the podcast part. I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so first up, we're going to talk about gazpacho. It's that time of year where you've got so many tomatoes and peppers and onions and everything already. Melons,
fruits,
all to put together, grapes. You ever heard of the green grape gazpacho that was such a hit for a while?
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while.
Was that like Argentina or... I don't know where that came from, Peru maybe or something, I don't know. Our friend Herschel Taghap is here to tell us about his new Hella Rice article series in Seattle Met magazine. We are going to, I guess, get punked by Amy and Madeline on some sort of, you know, they like to torture us. A couple
yes.
weeks ago, it was Cheetos mac and cheese.
Mm, that was so delicious. I'm still tasting it.
Oh, my God. Of course you're still tasting it because it still hasn't been digested in your system. So anyway, I guess they've got something to kind of torture us with again today, but they're not telling. So you'll have to wait to hear what that is, as will we. Lastly, at the end of our show, as we traditionally do, it's our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge, brought to you by Rub With Love, my handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards. And I say the mustards, but the mustards are under a different label, just under my label, Tom Douglas Shallot, Toasted Shallot Mustard.
Yeah, but they're delicious. Don't
but
forget
it's delicious,
them.
Yeah. And they add a flavorful kick to a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable.
The complete pack. If you have the mustard and the rub, you can't miss any dinner.
You know, I took the 12-pack to the farm last week when I went, because every time I go to the farm, you know, I do partially own the farm, like 50% with my wife.
That's more than partially.
Every time I go to the farm, and, you know, we've been working out all day, I've been in the shop, Jackie's been picking veggies, whatever it is, I go to make something for dinner, and the rubs make it super simple. So, okay. I get something in my mind that afternoon. Like, I'm going to make a little I like to take my 12-spice rub, and I mix it with a little bit of honey and do a glaze for barbecue ribs.
Yeah, perfect.
Perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go inside, go to the kitchen in my very own house. Where's the Chinese 12-spice? Oh, I don't know. I think maybe we used that up a few weeks ago. It's like, well, you know, I know where to get more. Why don't you call and tell me to bring some with me? So now I literally have to preemptively ship rubs to my farm
to
so
make
that
sure
when
you
I
have
get
it.
There, that I have it. That's not right.
Good problem to have, though.
I'm just saying that's not right. Okay, taste of the week. What was something that you enjoyed this week, chef?
I must say that I'm still in the melon. I discovered the melon, and I'm sorry to say I don't know the name of it, but it looks like a squash. It's got those ring like this, and I tested it for the first time.
You know, we're on the radio. They can't see what you just did. You know that, right?
Oh, yes. Of course not. What was I doing?
It has like a cantaloupe ring on it?
No, well, no. More like a squash. You know the squash that's really rounded, wavy, really hard to peel?
All right. All right. Keep going. No, I don't.
Okay. Well, that was a good explanation on the radio, I guess. Anyway, needless to say, I found this melon that was incredible. And I think that if you have another good melon this year, this is the time to do it, because they're at the peak of the season. You know, they're not going to be here for another couple of weeks, just another week or two, and then after that, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest two things, melon and tomatoes. This is it. This is the peak of the season, the most you're going to get. And in 2 weeks from now, they won't be here because it's going to get rainy and cold, as we know, and inevitably they're going to start dying. So time to make your sauces, put it away in your freezer. And for the melon, I would say make a beautiful gazpacho. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, things like this, and just put that and enjoy the moment.
Right. We have just a boatload of cantaloupe right now that we're picking because of that very same reason, right? It's time. They're not going to get any better out there, really, at this point. So we're picking them all and processing them into puree for our melonritas out at the dock. So that's pretty fun. My taste of the week, you know, I've been going around to some of the Seattle restaurants that are back open, and I'm really concentrating on the ones downtown because downtown is very different than Ballard or even Lower Queen Anne or even the International District. You know, that's got much more activity than we have here in the core. And when about the core, we're kind of talking Denny to Yesler and Waterfront to the freeway, which is what Bourne Avenue, we'll say. Capitol Hill has got some business going on. But the core is where you and I do a lot of work, and especially me. I'm 100%,
right.
Except, I have the warehouse kitchen now at 52nd, 14th in Ballard. So I've been trying to go to some restaurants, and I ended up the other night, I want to say it was Sunday night, at the Met Grill downtown. After work, I just kind of drove down.
And they were open on Sunday?
They were open.
Wow.
And they've been open for a couple of months now. And so I went in and I sat in the bar, which you can't sit at the bar, but you could sit in...
In the lounge.
In the lounge. And I watched the end of the baseball game or something like that. Maybe it was...
Saturday, maybe.
Because I watched the end of the baseball game, and which is super fun. That's something I used to do. It's like, wow, this is nice. I'm able to sit down. You can have a cocktail, nice glass of red wine. You know, it is stunning, the prices at the Met Grill, I'll just say. I haven't paid $20 for a glass of red wine in 6 months, right? but anyway, that was interesting. But I guess my taste of the week point is I never have a baked potato unless I'm at a steakhouse.
Yeah.
And I ordered my steak. It was perfectly delicious. But I had a baked potato with it and some sautéed spinach. That baked potato was so good. And, I'm not disparaging the Met. It's great. They did it perfectly. It had nice, crispy skin. I like the skin on my baked potato.
Of course.
I eat the whole thing, except they're so damn big, I can't eat. But I love them soaked in butter, lots of salt. It felt luxurious.
Right.
It was so fun to eat a baked potato in a bar, watching TV, chewing on a steak. But the potato was what brought me home.
Right.
To the restaurant experience again. And I would have thought it was the martini I had. And maybe the martini helped me make the baked potato bigger than it was in my head. I don't know. But that was nice.
That sounds really delicious.
It felt good. And it felt good to be in a restaurant, even though I was the only one in the bar. But there were other people in the dining room. It felt good.
I must say, I haven't had a baked potato in a long time.
I know. But that I just don't have them. I don't make them at home, and I just don't have them unless I'm at a steakhouse.
Yeah.
So that was a nice treat for me.
Sour cream, some chives.
No.
Nothing?
No.
Just butter?
I am a butter, baked potato, salt person. That's it.
Good.
Don't be stepping on. Get your mouth off my baked potato.
I thought in steakhouse they always give you sour cream with your baked potato.
Oh, they offer it for sure. Cheese sauce. They offer it. But I am a pure. Pure person.
Oui, Monsieur Douglas.
Yeah. A gallon of butter and 1 pound baked potato.
Oh, it's melted, too.
No, it melts in the hot potato. Anyway, up next, we have such a big show for you. Let's gab about some gazpacho.
Yep.
And we'll be right back here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for gazpacho. Our gardens are screaming out that there's so much of us here. Celery, peppers, grapes, tomatoes, nectarines. There's all sorts
zucchini.
Of
that's zucchini. That's one good way to get rid of your zucchini.
We're picking our late Indian summer peaches right now.
Yep.
Let's talk gazpacho, because you can make gazpacho out of anything. I don't know if you literally can. To me, I don't know if gazpacho, kind of like risotto, right?
Right.
People always say, I'm going to have cauliflower risotto, I'm going to have beet risotto or something, where they're actually cutting the beets into the size pieces of rice.
Right.
But in reality, if it's like, it's like aioli, right? Aioli is a garlic mayonnaise. You
Correct.
Can't have a fennel aioli, you know, or fennel.
You could have anything you
I
want.
Know you can't. All I'm saying is gazpacho, I don't know if there is a classic ingredient list for it. And if you call something else, like peaches, pureed peaches, gazpacho, is that legal in the food world?
Yeah, well, it has become legal for sure for the last 10, 15 years.
So tell me about what kind of gazpachos you're making. By the way, I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat. Gazpacho we make at Luc, we always start the season with the Bing cherries. We do Bing cherry gazpacho.
So when you say you start the season as far as...
Summer. Yeah.
And you'll make gazpacho all summer long utilizing the different fruits of the season.
Exactly. Okay. So we do gazpacho of Bing cherry for probably a month. You know, June through mid-July, and then we go into...
Chef, that's a lot of cherries to pit. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's okay. We get the work.
Okay.
You know, it's okay. We pit. But anyway, Bing cherry gazpacho, red onion. We throw in a few bell peppers, zucchini, and that base of bell pepper, zucchini, and red onion is usually the base that I like, because I like that bitey from the red onion. I like the calmness from the zucchini because it's pretty bland, and I like the sweetness from the peppers. So that's the base combination for my gazpacho.
So when you say bell peppers, you're saying red peppers.
Red peppers,
red,
yeah.
Bell peppers,
yeah.
Okay.
And that's the base for my gazpacho, and then adding on, obviously, the Bing cherries with a little bit of red wine vinegar, or we make our own cherry vinegar, red wine vinegar, cherry, we bring it to a boil, or to about just below a boil, and then let it sit with some tarragon, and then we have a vinegar that gets built up from that. And that's the base that we use for the gazpacho, because I like my gazpacho with a bite, not acid bite, not
an acid bite, yeah.
Not sweet. So, but the flavor of the cherries is obviously what makes the whole dish. You know, you got to make sure that it's 2/3 cherries and the rest is vegetable.
Right. I'll also say to our listeners, when you just heard what Terry said, that's why you go to a restaurant.
Correct.
Because restaurants, I mean, like you just described so many layers of flavor just
correct.
In a matter of 30 seconds, right?
Right.
When you added tarragon here and you started with you made your red wine vinegar and then you added cherries to that
right.
and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That's why you are who you are.
Right. Yeah. And then you finish with some beautiful, this is when you use that very expensive olive oil. You drizzle that on top of your soup and then you take some beautiful bread and you make quickly cooked those cube bread, you know, croutons in olive oil. And then you put them right on top of your gazpacho, gives it a nice little contrast of texture. And bread in soup is always a welcome idea, I think. So there we go.
So are you a chunky or a pureed on the cherries?
It's a little bit of both, because we put it through the RoboCoupe, but we don't blend it, we don't strain it. So there's little chunks of fruits and vegetables in there, but not big cubes. Mm-hmm. I'm not a just cube vegetable. You know, not like a ceviche idea where you have all those texture of crunchiness. This is a little bit more, the gazpacho is a little bit more liquid.
So the same baseline, the same technique with the vinegar works. You get through the peaches that way.
Correct.
You get through apricots, plums,
correct.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Now you're into,
and then we even go
now we're into fall. We're starting to pick apples,
so,
right?
So I was going to say, we even go all the way to apple. Now, apple, I don't put zucchini in the apple soup, and I don't put bell peppers.
Mm-hmm.
I just go onions and apple. And I sweat the onions first, and then I finish. So you take the onions, you put them in a pan, you sweat them down to a translucent stage, still crunchy, but translucent.
Mm.
So they start giving up a little bit. Put that in the food processor with your apples, and then a little bit of apple vinegar just to enhance the flavor. And then you finish it like that. And it's a very nice way to start a meal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the apple season for the gazpacho is very short because it gets cold very quickly, so we move on. And
so people aren't really interested in eating cold soups anymore, is what you're saying?
Well, by the time you get to, you know, a week in
fall,
in apple, you're done, yeah. So now is the time to do the apple, actually, you know, finish the tomato, finish the peaches. Did I mention tomatoes?
Cause jump back to tomatoes for a minute, because that's kind of where people are probably at right now.
Right. So right now we get those gorgeous tomato, you know, which is always two or three that are actually starting to juice out, you know, and those are the perfect tomato to make this kind of thing. So the way I make my gazpacho, it's not a gazpacho, it's more like a tomato. I call it bisque, but it has no cream in it, no dairy in it. Sauteed tomato in olive oil, sauteed shallots in olive oil. And when I say saute, I mean like literally cut tomato in cubes and then saute them for like 2 minutes max. Put the whole thing into a food processor and blend the whole thing up. And then strain it. So now you have a smooth, like almost like a coulis idea of onions and tomato. And then you put the basil in there at the last minute, because all the basil right now needs to be picked from the garden because it's going to go bad in the next couple of weeks. So you pick all that basil and you put that into your soup. So once you strain it, you get that beautiful tomato and basil flavor. Lots of olive oil. I like to incorporate olive oil at the end when I blend my soup, so the flavor of olive oil is a finishing touch. Then you've got this wonderful soup on your hand. You refrigerate that, and you get that in the fridge for at least a week or two.
Mm.
So not 2 weeks, but a week. And it's great to give to your kids for lunch, you know, talking about school lunch and everything. This is a perfect thing to do because they will love it because it's nice. It's got a beautiful flavor of tomato. And you can always add little, you know, what do you call those little fishes on top or whatever? Give it a little personality so the kids are still interested. You know.
The gazpacho I was thinking about before with the grapes is an almond and grape gazpacho. And
White.
Way back, years and years ago, when I was a young cook, Penelope Casas, I think her name was, wrote a book about that, and that's where I stole that recipe from.
That's a white gazpacho.
Gazpacho, yeah. Almond and green grapes.
Right. Great gazpacho.
I think if you go back to what you said about the croutons, to me, like when you're putting olive oil croutons into the cherry soup, doesn't work in my mind. I'm sure it was delicious.
Yeah.
But I would also encourage people that, you know, when you go out to a nice bakery like Seawolf or, you know, something like that, buy a couple extra loaves and then pre-slice your bread into Ziplocs into your freezer. And then when you make a soup like that, you can pull out a half a baguette that's already cut, you know, ready to go. And then you just really bake that full of olive oil and garlic until it's nice and crusty. And that's the perfect, that hot, crunchy bread, like you said, is the perfect thing with these cold soups, right?
Yeah.
It just feels good. It reminds me of that panam tom ket that you get in Spain, right?
Yeah.
Just that tomato toast where you take these overripe tomatoes, a nice crunchy baguette.
It's like mini pizza.
And literally, you just take the raw tomato and you rub it on the crunchy baguette.
Right.
And the baguette tears the juice and tears the tomato right onto its surface.
Right.
And then you've got, I mean, it's just lovely. And before before you even do the baguette part, do the same thing with a whole clove of garlic. Just rub it against the crusty surface of the bread so that you're not getting big chunks of garlic in your mouth. You're just getting that kind of
flavor.
Garlic oil essence.
Yep.
And then the tomato on top. That is one of life's simplest pleasures.
Right. This is how we used to make garlic bread in the old days.
In the old days. I didn't live in the old days. Well, what are you talking about?
Okay, well, a while back. You take garlic clove, cut them in half, and you would definitely rub all the baguette with it.
You just rub it, right?
Yeah. And you never did, like, put garlic on top of the bread or whatever. Mm. You just rub the bread, and then you toast it, and it's delicious.
Well, it's just one of those simplistic type things that are so pleasurable, especially now with the ripe tomatoes.
That's right.
You couldn't get more simple than a piece of toast rubbed with a ripe tomato, right? So good. I remember having that at Calpep on the Ramblas in Barcelona.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, it was really just
classic.
Lovely, right at the base of the Ramblas. Okay, I'm continuing to get hungry as we speak.
That's right.
Hella Rice, what the hell is it? On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show. Tom Douglas here.
Thierry Rogiro, the chef in the hat, also here.
We are in downtown Seattle at the Hot Stove Society, 4th and Virginia, second floor of the Hotel Andra, right above Lola Restaurant, which is still temporarily closed.
And can't wait till you guys are back in.
We're moving indoors at Sirius Pie this week for the first time. It's our first restaurant where we're seating people indoors. All over the city, people are eating indoors. I've been eating indoors. So we're going to try it. We're going to see what happens. So looking forward to that. If you want to go, Luke is open right now. When?
That's right. Luke is open Wednesday through Saturday. We're doing outside patio and indoor. And believe me, most people are happy indoors right now, especially with that smoke.
All the smoke.
So it's been doing fine. We're 6 feet apart, the whole observance of the guideline. And, you know, just trying to be good people. And everybody's wearing a mask. You have to wear a mask in and out of the restaurant, and when traveling around the restaurant. So,
Our box this week, we do a dinner box every week, and our box this week is Tanaka-san.
Oh.
And, you know, Tanaka-san has been closed now since February. No, since January. And so we closed long before that the virus
COVID
came around. Yeah. So it's amazing how many people want the Tanaka-san dinner box. It's,
you know what?
So
it was a
sweet,
delicious restaurant.
Yeah, coconut beef and chicken wings and
slushies.
Slushies.
That's the first thing I miss from Sake
slushies.
Slushies.
All right. Herschel Taghap is here. Herschel has been an instructor here at the Hot Stove. He's worked in social media with us. He's been a chef with us. He's just a man about town. A man of all things good. DJ Special Dark, right? Is his stage name for his DJ business. And now you're writing an article for the Seattle Met magazine called Hella Rice.
Hella Rice, that's right.
Tell us about that.
Thanks for having me. So Hella Rice was something that I would just post on social media on a regular basis. And it was just be things I'd be cooking at home, just trying to get my family fed, pretty much. And it was always something to kill the boredom. While I was here at the restaurant with Tom,
You were bored at the restaurant with me?
I was not, Tom. Oh. But, you know, when I'm cooking for my family on the weekends or my day off, I would spend a whole day, you know, making stew or making pasta. Now that I have a son, he's about 3 years old. Like, we make pasta all the time. We make smoothies. We do all those things that, you know, little hands can really get, you know, kind of distracted by.
Mm-hmm.
So Hollow Rice is pretty much an article series on Seattle Met that there's only one that's live right now. I think the next one comes up in a couple weeks on SeattleMet.com. But the first one was about kimchi butayaki udon. So that was just stir-fried pork belly with kimchi, kind of like a Japanese slash Korean slash, you know, bar food that I would used to get at Kushi Bar in Belltown.
Mm-hmm.
That place doesn't exist anymore, but I used to go there between drinks at Rob Roy. So at Rob Roy, we would have our cocktails. And then, you know, I'm a lightweight, so we would have like 1.5 cocktails and then sneak out, have a couple tongue skewers and some noodles and maybe like a light beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then sneak back in and then finish our cocktails and then cash out and then go home.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes eating when you go out at night, which I miss the most, is the best part. So trying to recreate those times when I would be cooking out.
Slightly inebriated cooking.
Yeah, slightly,
mm-hmm.
You know, trying to capture that. So,
right.
You know, I do the photography for it. So I'm kind of socially distancing. I kind of like a 2-for-1 so I can write the stories and take pictures.
So you buy the kimchi.
You buy the
whole dish? Oh, you make the kimchi.
I make the kimchi. Well, it's just already around.
Yeah.
And then you buy frozen udon noodles, the mince. The thicker ones you can get from the Asian market, like Wajimaya or Viet Hoa, and then you just stir fry it with pork and a little bit of sesame oil. It's delicious.
So in the same nature as fried rice.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
Yeah. So instead of a wok, I like using a nonstick pan just so I can get the nice sear on the udon noodles, kind of like that crispiness that you get from a pot sticker. I love it. I try to eat it every other week. My wife asks for new stuff on a regular basis. So
let's go back a couple of things that struck me about what you said. And,
sure.
And I think that is an area that people get a little, not concerned with, but they get intimidated by. When you said it's kind of Japanese, Korean, Thai, you know, sure. Whatever those three countries that you said sure. Were in that dish. That is the way of the world anymore when it comes to kind of late night food, bar
totally.
Food especially,
totally.
No matter what kind of restaurant you're in.
Yeah, I think...
The mishmash.
Totally. And I think that's why I like to open with that. It yes, hella rice. Hella being a Bay Area term for a lot. Hella. And then rice is just... I love rice. The rice was the first food I ate as a kid. Rice was the first thing I fed my son when he tried solid food. But I think, you know, having this Japanese dish, the stir-fried udon, with a Korean-inflected ingredient, kimchi... kind of doesn't have a home. And since I'm writing about the food that I cook from home, I can make it kind of, I mean, it is historic. It's a historical thing. It's food that I have cooked in the last 5 years. It's not, hey, check out this amazing thing that I'm going to have on a menu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a menu. I don't have a restaurant. So, you know, I can kind of shoot from the hip and be as honest as possible.
But it's okay to borrow, right? It's okay.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I know Roy Choi did that with tacos, made that famous, right? The kimchi
absolutely.
Tacos in
right.
L.A.
And he's crushing, yeah.
And I think that's okay. People should feel free to borrow.
Well,
they might not be expert at it. Do they need
sure.
to be expert at each of those cuisines before they're allowed to borrow and mishmash them all together?
I personally, you got to eat. So if a dish doesn't taste good and you add soy sauce and it, you know... My next one, I'm doing a classic chicken piccata,
mm-hmm.
right? Spoiler, right? And I'm adding yuzu juice because it's COVID. I can't go to the store and just get one lemon. It doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I'm using yuzu juice. I'm using Szechuan peppercorns because I didn't have...
Things you have in your house.
Yeah, you just figure it out, you know? And it's exciting to borrow because you're at home, you know? You can't go to... a restaurant every night. I miss it, and I miss the produce that you guys can get on a regular basis, because we're all fishing from the same, you know.
Well, we're fishing from the same planet, yes.
Yeah, totally.
We all have the same ingredients.
Yeah, but I do think, Terry, and I guess my point is, you know, people like me, sometimes when I make a pot sticker or a wonton soup or something, I get accused, or it feels somewhat like cultural appropriation, but I think it's interesting. I mean, you're Filipino, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's you feel perfectly comfortable borrowing, and I think that that's okay, and I think that we should lighten up a little bit. To me, it's a little bit of a respect issue. I love pot stickers.
Sure.
I want to create them. I want to make them. That's just my nature as a cook.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to kind of how it's okay to mishmash.
Well, I would say your daughter is how old, and you've been making pot stickers in thermoses for her. You know, and those are the kinds of things that inspire me.
Uh-huh.
Like I've sent my son with pot stickers, and he only eats the wrappers, and it drives me insane because all the work is in
the
port.
Only eats the wrappers.
You know, he's young, so we'll figure it out, you know. But
that's
but
so
the
funny.
Whole thing
stop
is
stop putting
like,
candy inside.
Totally. But you've been making pot stickers forever. And
yeah.
As long as you respect it, you know, we're not disrespecting cultures, you know. It's if it's a Korean restaurant and everyone there is Korean and you're serving Korean ingredients, I mean I'm just saying with the labor crunch, it's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
So someone has to be in charge of the kimchi at Tanaka-san, let's say.
Right.
Was that person Korean? I don't know. But
probably not.
Is it banging? Does it taste
delicious?
Is it
banging good?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, I miss the coconut beef. I can't make it at home. I had too much fish sauce. Or the I spill the cream on the top of the coconut milk. Like,
yeah.
You know, I know.
And you want to know what? That coconut beef is better made 40 pounds at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can do this slow braise that you can't do at home, right?
Stews
at home,
like
it
that.
Evaporates out too fast,
right.
But in a big stew pot like that.
Those stews never work well in a small, small, small batch.
I mean,
they
I don't have
work
a tilt
well in good batch, yeah. In bigger batches.
You don't have a tilt skillet at home?
I don't
home?
Have a tilt skillet at home.
Jeez.
I'm trying, man.
You are lame, sir.
I'm hustling.
So what else can we... the next article, we're going to look forward to a little bit of your version of... veal piccata.
Chicken
piccata.
Or chicken piccata.
I learned it from a hotel chef in Chicago, Illinois, while I was still working the front desk somewhere, bored out of my mind. shout outs to the O'Hare Clarion Airport Hotel. And the chef, he just pulled me back, and I would eat it all the time. Every day, I would order it, because it's just a fried chicken nugget with, like, lemon sauce. Mm-hmm. And the day before I left for culinary school... I made it for 50 people. I made the mashed potatoes in the PVC pipe tower with the Parmesan chip on. I don't know.
No way. That's so funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Delicious. I stand by it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then because it's hella rice, I figure it has to have some kind of rice element for the next couple months. So it's going to be saucy, delicious, easy to use. I mean, you're going to need to take a couple trips to a few other restaurants, supermarkets. But
all right, look for Herschel's byline in Seattle Met. I'm sure it's going to be online and in the paper copy.
Absolutely.
And we will be standing by curious. Come back anytime.
Sounds
talk
like
about,
fun.
Talk about your articles as they come out. You are a treasure. Herschel Tag Hap.
Thanks, Tom.
Coming up now, it's called Pass It Down. And man, oh man, do people have some very nice stories to tell about their family traditions and recipes. On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Chef Tom Douglas here.
And Chef Terry Root, you're the chef in a hat.
And Chef, we started a segment a few shows ago called Don't Let the Recipe Box Die With You.
I think this is going to be, for the long term, one of the most successful part of the show.
Well, that's good.
I think it's very endearing to everybody.
Yeah. And the whole idea, the whole concept behind it is we have this sign here at the Hot Stove right out in front of our cookbook library. We have a little lending library out front there where you can, when you come to a class, you could bring one of your old books and take one of the books that's there. And just, it's like a cookbook exchange here at the Hot Stove. And we also have, I have collected over the years some recipe card boxes. Like, you know, I'm a junker, right? Like,
sure,
I'll get on eBay and I'll get my mindset on something like my little chef butcher twine holders and things like that. Well, I got junking on recipe boxes. And half the ones that I got, I didn't really think about it at first. I'll say the first two that I got just came in the mail. I paid $3 for them or $5.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it costs more to get them shipped than it is to
correct.
Buy. But they just came. But the third one I got came with all the recipes inside. And it was like reading someone's history.
Right.
Because you could see, you know, some had been passed down, some had been made, and then you'll see, all of a sudden you'll see, like, instead of a cup of water in this particular recipe, it's a half a cup, because somebody obviously had a disaster, right?
Where
something was super soupy. Or,
somebody actually took the time to try it and go, wait a minute,
Too much water or salt or whatever it is. So then I got interested. When I bought more recipe boxes, I only bought ones that came with
recipes
that are full, because, you know, they happen at estate sales. You know, your grandma dies. And or something like that, and everything's kind of put up at an estate sale. And the people that are doing it, maybe it's their kids, maybe the people are traumatized. And they don't think sometimes,
that's
like,
right.
Boy, in 10 years, I'm really going to want those recipes because they're sad. And so sometimes you get these things. And so I started looking for ones that were only filled with recipes. And that's where the idea came from, because when you hand down a recipe from you to your kid or to your grandchild, you're handing down a lot more than the list of ingredients and the list of directions.
Correct.
You're handing down your history. And so we've asked our listeners to kind of chime in. And Madeline Dow Pennington, our producer, has been interviewing some folks about when we get, you know, they get handed in. And the stories are tear-jerking.
I know.
I mean, in a good way. Joyful tears.
She emailed it to us, and I was like, wow, these are cool stories.
Isn't that cool? So, Maddie, tell us a little bit about the story we have and the recipe we have for today.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, I think you were right in saying that people are loving this segment, and it's truly inspiring them to go out and collect those family recipes that they're trying to find. So we actually are very fortunate to have a loyal listener, Janice Johnson, email us actually twice. She sent us two notes. First, about her grandmother's chocolate cake recipe that was so epic and so passed down amongst the whole family, but yet nobody could find the actual recipe. So she,
her grandmother had passed, right?
Her grandmother had passed. Uh-huh. It's a large, she emphasizes, a large Catholic family of multiple siblings.
I come from one of those. Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is she is an avid baker. She listens to the show while she's baking and cooking in the kitchen, actually. So this was kind of a fun, inspiring moment. She tried to recreate the cake multiple times. Her husband is benefiting from all of these experiences, she said. But lo and behold, you know, she was trying to recreate. She felt like she recreated the recipe just correctly for the cake. But then it was the frosting that she was trying to get at.
Ah, she was perplexed
by
the frosting.
Exactly. And going back and forth and back and forth. And she told us about all the different relatives that she reached out to. And the best part of this whole story is at the end of this whole experience, the person who has the least kitchen experience, who doesn't really bake, didn't really have the things, turns out she was the one who had the actual recipe for the whole cake and the whole frosting. She completely shocked her. So,
and the whole time she had the recipe and nobody knew it?
The whole time.
The work to get the cake correct without the recipe.
Yep.
And then all the work to try and get the frosting correct without the recipe.
Yeah.
And the sibling
and that's the thing. She just said, you just never know. And it turns out that this sibling that she, again, didn't assume had it, turns out that she had actually requested it from her grandmother before she passed because she wanted to make it for her daughter's birthday. And so, lo and behold, this
Isn't
whole
crazy?
Time.
Yeah. It is so very, she, it's very cool to read the whole
super
thing.
Super cute. So yeah. She sent us this wonderful story, which we just wanted to share and give a shout out to Janice. She did send the recipe.
Yay!
Yeah, so we will definitely put that up on our Facebook and send it out to anybody who's interested. It was such a touching story. Mm-hmm. She actually also has some really fun neighbors. You know, time of the pandemic, you're getting to know your neighbors a little bit better across the
They're
fence.
Eating chocolate
maybe.
Cake every day.
Exactly.
Well, it is a fun thing to do. Is, you know, you get tired of your own cooking. People go to restaurants for a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's be fun to do like a meal exchange with your neighbor.
Absolutely. Well, these neighbors
you know
of Janice's were, yeah, if you like their cooking, exactly. These neighbors she also wanted to share with us that, you know, they have an old Italian family recipe, George and Mary Saulnier. They had George's mother's marinara sauce recipe that they ended up finding the original one, splatters and all, on the index card. And they ended up framing it and putting it in the kitchen, which I always thought was
very
super sweet.
So did they blow it up and like do an 8x10 of it?
They did. They have. Well, I think they have the actual original card, but then they have the recipe that they share with all the other family members. But it's just a beautiful frame in the kitchen. And she commented, again, to the point of the popularity of sort of this segment, and she commented, it's the greatest talking piece when you have company over.
Yeah. I never thought about it until I read that putting it as a frame on the counter in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great piece of conversation. You know, everyone's going to go,
absolutely.
Wow, that is so cool. What is this?
Well, and you'll spend maybe 10 minutes. You know, somebody might write down the recipe, or you'll spend maybe 5 minutes talking about the recipe.
Yeah.
And you'll end up, what you're really going to do is spend an hour talking about grandma.
Yeah, and totally. Her trip, and memories.
And her immigration from Europe, and, you know, all the things that go along with that recipe.
And probably come up with the idea of, like, hey, why don't you guys make a recipe, and then we exchange and this and that. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's
it's kind of nice, too. I also think just even the handwriting and the stories and the splatters and all of that has kind of been fun to see. We've seen people send in their photographs of torn pages. You know, Janice is saying now that in the time of COVID, they've actually spent the last 6 months sort of checking in with all the family members. Everybody sends in a memory, sends in a recipe. They want to take this time while they're indoors to check in with family members and keep this alive. So she just said that this segment has kind of been an underlying to that whole goal to get sort of everybody
That's
involved,
very cool.
which is really fun. So we wanted to give a lovely shout out to Janice. And again, if anybody has their family recipes, we are always looking to feature them on the segment, whether we just want to talk about them, change them up, see who you want to pass it down to. Please, please feel free to email us at hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com or give us a shout out on our Facebook page, Hot Stove Radio, and we would love to share them on the show.
Absolutely. This is the time of year, the harvest time at the end of the year, when we start to make, I want to say, their names got changed when they immigrated, but Grandma D'Amico's, I want to say, antipasto recipe. And which is that classic Italian antipasto with tomato, carrots, celery, cauliflower, tuna, olives. And my father-in-law used to make it every year, and I still have jars like that are almost 10 years old now that we won't ever open because he's passed, and it's our memory of him. And it's not any good anymore, 10 years in that jar is my guess. But it is something that I would like to continue to make as Christmas presents and things like that. So
this is the time to do it.
All right, up next, our former CEO and best pal, Pamela Hinckley, has joined the board of the Farmland Trust. For Washington Farmland Trust, formerly PCC Farmland Trust. And the executive director, Melissa Campbell, is going to join us next segment to talk about that on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Tom Douglas here.
Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, also here.
We have another full hour coming your way. We're excited to be here and excited that you're probably out harvesting your tomatoes right now. And you're
canning,
and it's almost time to pick grapes, if not already. The valley where our farm is over in Prosser is a buzz. It's like a beehive of trucks and farm equipment.
We don't think about this stuff, but it still needs to happen.
Hops being harvested right now. Huge, huge rows of hop trucks going through the fields, and corn being crushed for silage corn for all the dairies over there. So much going on. In this segment, we're going to, I guess, get back together and torture Tom and Terry. Our producers, Amy and Madeline, are back with another surprise visit of something that we probably shouldn't be eating. And finally, we're going to wrap up the show with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge brought to you by Rub with Love. And I think we slipped in a little Jones Soda segment too, didn't we, Maddie?
We're going to add that. Yeah, we're going to give him a call next.
Okay. All right. Right now, we're going to welcome Melissa Campbell, Executive Director of Washington Farmland Trust. Good afternoon, Melissa.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good afternoon.
Great to be talking to you. Hello.
You have a big event coming, and you have somehow coerced my former CEO, Pamela Hinckley, to join your board, and she is a powerhouse. I hope you know that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, having Pam on our side, you know, she's been a all of you have really been champions of farmland preservation and of the Farmland Trust work for years. And we're so excited to kind of memorialize that with Pam's role on our board, especially as we roll out a new name and a refreshed vision for farmland conservation. Just having her voice at the table is incredibly it's an honor, and it's really important as we move forward. So thank you.
Cool. So what is this new name and new mission? It's not really a new mission, but let's just tell people about what you do.
Yeah, thanks. So you may remember us as PCC Farmland Trust. We were founded by PCC Community Markets over 20 years ago now as a farmland conservation organization that would serve the state of Washington. And so that remains steadfast. We are still a farmland conservation organization and we work statewide. And yet we had a name that didn't represent who we were. We often talked about who we were not instead of who we were. And so on our 20th anniversary, and over many years of work, we worked toward changing our name. We are now Washington Farmland Trust, and we are still dedicated to conserving land across Washington and also helping farmers find land. That's a new piece of our work that has evolved over the past few years, where we're really doing one-on-one matching with people who are looking for land as the next generation starts to build their farm businesses and as their current generation of farmers look to transition their land to the next generation.
The land doesn't get doesn't go from 5 acres of lush farmland into 500 apartment units.
That's right. Yep. We conserve land by removing that right to develop and ensure that it's farmland forever. It's a permanent restriction that never goes away, and it requires that the land be maintained as agriculture forever.
Do you also watch monocropping? Like, you won't let 100,000 acres of broccoli grow in one piece of land?
I don't know. Acres of broccoli sounds quite delicious, but it gets a little more difficult to dictate what farmers are growing. We let them sort of manage the business side of their business. But we do work together when it comes to farm practices, and we incentivize sustainable land management practices and provide funds to farmers to implement sustainable practices as it matches their business goals. Yes.
Super fun. Are you involved also in getting them to market or just the actual growing of the vegetables?
So, you know, really,
because that's a hard part, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, we just really ensure that their farmland is protected as farmland forever. They run their businesses. We don't wade into that territory. Farmers know their business better than we could ever even imagine to, and we're not farmers. And so really we place the permanent conservation easement on the property that runs with the title of the land, and we talk with them. We meet with them, walk the property once a year to ensure that the terms of the easement are being upheld. But in terms of marketing and getting products that last 100 miles into the stores, we like to try to be helpful to that, but we're not in the thick of helping people decide that. We're really about land and conserving land and making sure that there is land for the future.
And how are we doing in the state of Washington in today's day in terms of conservation of land? How are we doing? Good? Are we needing to do a lot more? What's the status?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we need to do more. We've had some pockets of success across the state, including here in King County, where they've had a very robust and successful farmland conservation program, but that stopped at the county borders. And we are still losing land here in Puget Sound and across the state as our region grows. And so we have a lot more work to do in light of that growth and protecting the most valuable land and keeping it in agriculture. So we've made great strides, but we have a lot more work to do. And especially in light of climate change, that's really changing how and where land is the most productive. And so ensuring that there's farmland for food production in areas that have water, that have prime soils, and making sure those stay in agriculture, that's even more important as our climate warms.
So our listeners, if you want to help in this whole process, you're having an event with one of my favorite locals, Dave Matthews, longtime Washingtonian and farmland advocate. And when is the event and how do people get involved?
That's right. Thank you. Yeah, the event's called Love the Land. It's an online benefit concert featuring our favorite local musician, Dave Matthews. It's September 30th at 7 p.m. And it's a fundraiser that will raise funds for not just Washington Farmland Trust, but for Viva Farms, our partners, too. And this represents a replacement of our annual fundraisers that we all lost due to COVID. So we're trying to replace those critical funds for our two organizations. And we'll do that through an online benefit concert And you can buy tickets at WashingtonFarmlandTrust.org, and it's September 30th at 7 p.m.
That will be so fun. Dave Matthews, he gets involved in so many cool things.
I know. It's nice to see celebrities doing help like this.
Other Northwest musicians, Luz Elena Mendoza of Y La Bamba, Tomo Nakayama, and Naomi Wachira are also going to be in the concert the auction or the benefit concert for FarmlandTrust.org.
Congratulations and good luck, and keep up the good work. It's needed.
Thank you all, and thanks for your support in the work of the Washington Farmland Trust and the Love the Land concert. We really appreciate being part of the show today. Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Melissa Campbell, Executive Director for the Washington Farmland Trust. Up next, it's time to talk about getting out the vote with Joan Soda on Cairo Radio and the Hot Stove Society Radio Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. The chef in the chapeau stands to my left.
And Tom Douglas stands to my right.
How are you, chef? Are you still hanging in there?
I am so beautiful.
Are you registered to vote?
Yes, twice. As a French citizen.
Oh, so you can vote in French elections, too.
I can vote in France.
Ah, good for you. I did not know that. We are going to entertain the folks from Joan Soda right now because I love what they're doing with their new flavors and their new campaign, which is benefiting a group called When We All Vote. And Madeline's here to tell us a little bit more about that and our dinner box series to go along with the Jones Soda box. We're sending money to the same group, isn't that right?
I don't know. I'm sorry, Tom. Let's start over because okay. That's our benefit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Maisie can talk about.
We're working with a different organization, but it's all for the common good of getting out people.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get. I can leave the introduction. We'll just have Sean. Sean, please edit this in from after I talk to the chef about him voting in France. Okay. We'd like to welcome to the show Macy Antonello. She's the vice president of marketing for Joan Soda, and learn more about what they're doing with their new flavors, the new artwork on their bottles, and all the efforts they're making to pop the vote. Get it, Macy? Soda pop?
Love it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So just do you guys, just to ground you guys a little bit in Joan Soda, we've actually been around for about 25 years, and we're really known, to your point, about just having fun flavors, fun colors and flavors. We're made with cane sugar, and we're really known for our labels. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but a lot of those labels are actually consumer generated. And so that's sort of our heritage. And so we believe that Joan Soda really provides consumers, like, is a platform for them to kind of voice their opinions and their thoughts and whoever they are in the most authentic way. And so whether that is a picture of your dog, a picture of you skateboarding, you cooking for you guys, we really try to be a canvas for our consumers. In a really authentic way.
That's kind of the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think definitely a good commercial for the soda, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to promote the product, and I think people will get very involved, which is cool.
Yeah. So as far as voting goes, I think it's been interesting, a journey with COVID. I think just like the two of you, I think we've really had to kind of evolve and pivot. And so as we started thinking about this year and what do we have as a strength, our labels, as I just talked about, really are our strength. And using that as the walking billboard, like Theory was saying, is sort of like our bread and butter. And so earlier this year, we did something called the Message of a Hope series. So think of it as labels of pictures of chalk art and hearts and windows. And as we were kind of wrapping that up and we started thinking about this year, it just became a very natural evolution to think about what could we do in terms of the election. And as we talked about it more as a team, we just realized because we're trying to help people find their voice and do their thing, we really wanted people to just get out and vote at the end of the day. And so we talked about one, I think on the front of the labels, having voter themed artwork, on the back of the labels, having a QR code of like, wouldn't it be cool? We kind of talked about in theory, like, wouldn't it be cool to get people to register to vote and find a QR code? And so ended up working with voter participation, and they're really focused on getting, they call it like the Rising American
electorate. So it's young people, unmarried women, and minorities to really go out and vote. And just kind of reached out to them and said, like, we want to do this. Would you guys be interested in teaming up? And so now here we are on all of our cream soda, 500,000 cream soda. So it's a clear flavor, clear, because we want it to be nonpartisan.
I like it.
Like, really important. I think it's really important because, you know, if you really are authentic about consumers, you don't want to pick a side. You really want them to pick, make their decisions.
I would vote for it to be purple so that we would all get together and get to the table.
That's true. Yeah. We did actually entertain that too on Grape, but we just decided cream soda was going to be easier and more mm-hmm. easy to get out and just to get more distribution. And so, I hear you on that. So right now, if you go on so we have these, voter themed labels on our cream soda on 500,000 labels. The front will have voting themed artwork. And then the back, there is a QR code. You can just literally use your smartphone, take a picture of the QR code, and it'll send you to a website that's with Voter Participation Center. And you can, within 2 minutes, like, figure out if you're registered to vote. And if you're not, you can do it right away. And so that's sort of the program that we have. And so we're really excited about it. Just to help do our part, you know, we're a small brand, but we just want to do our part and just make sure people go and vote, because that's pretty much the biggest thing you can do right now. So, and it doesn't get more in terms of getting out your voice and being this authentic platform. It's kind of just like the perfect marriage in a lot of ways to really take a stand and encourage people to do it.
Now, did I miss somewhere? What's the actual flavor of this clear liquid? Did you say cream soda?
It's our cream soda flavor.
Cream soda.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And it's awesome.
It is awesome. I've had it many times.
And did you say who the artists were on the labels? Or they're just just consumer?
They're consumer, yeah. It's just because our, they're basically consumer-generated artwork. And so just reaching out to people and just getting their artwork on their labels.
That's awesome.
There's certainly Jones Soda in all the supermarkets that I shop in. I imagine you're mm-hmm. pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to look for this.
In Seattle, we are in both QFC, Fred Meyer, Albertson Safeways are really good bets to find this. And then we also are selling it online on our website as well. You can get your own custom six pack, or really my vision in putting it on our website was you could buy one and send it to somebody you love and encourage them to register to vote. It's actually a thought of time, yeah, if I'm exactly. honest with you guys. We're super excited. And we just really want to do our part and get the message out.
Well, it sounds so delicious. Madeline, I know we're doing a get out the vote effort with our West Wing box. You know, in October, West Wing, all the characters are getting back together for a reunion show.
Yeah.
Is it on regular TV or on Netflix?
It's
going
to be on HBO.
HBO.
That they're doing. And actually, Maisie and I were just emailing back and forth before the show, because I think we need to partner up. I think we need some cream soda with these boxes.
I definitely
it sounds
think that's
some
true. Yeah.
Delicious. We're going to be doing a fun West Wing themed box with some, as you mentioned, some portion of the proceeds going to a similar organization of When We All Vote. So I think our joint efforts will be awesome. We're going to have a dinner box starting October 1st. So really gearing up for the election coming up, as well as sort of tapping into that fan base of West Wing. I loved the show. Tom, I think you did.
Oh, my God, I love that
Who
show.
Who doesn't love that show?
We all get goosebumps
awesome
with
show.
The theme song. Yeah. It comes on, and we start crying.
And so. That might be the last, I mean, honestly, that might be the last, like, normal series that I ever watched.
Yeah.
Because I was busy working, and our daughter, you know, we watched with Loretta.
Yeah,
she loves still it. Loves that show to this day.
Yeah.
And,
so we're going to tap into that love affair for this box. We have some fun items that have some little puns for some favorite characters mm-hmm. and some delicious
one.
Things.
Give me your favorite one.
Okay, well, I will give this to you, Tom. Tom came up with the paleo for Leo, paleo steak salad with CJ Craig's and bacon.
And the Cabernet vinaigrette.
That's true.
Did you leave that one there?
No, that was
Remember,
good.
Abby was great. Stalker Channing. Yeah.
But what about your cocktail? What's your favorite cocktail in there?
Oh, the Just Lime and the Coconut. Drink it all up.
So we have some fun things. I think we're going to maybe include some Potomac and cheese, ode to the Potomac River out there. Tom didn't like that one for me.
I like the names of the people.
But we're excited. So
okay,
Macy,
it'll be fun to team up with Joan Soto with our West Wing Dinner Box. That's the whole month of October. So
Love it. Take a look for that.
So looking forward to working with you all.
And great. Thanks so much.
Appreciate that you are part of the solution. I think we all need to be part of the solution to get us all back to the dinner table and have civil conversations and talk.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Macy. That's
Macy
Antonello, VP of Marketing at Joan Soto, a local company right here in Seattle. So up next, apparently I smell something in the kitchen here, and our producers have been cooking for the last 30 minutes. And my little cheat note here, Terry, says the return of Torture Tom and Terry. This time with cauliflower. Mm. I love cauliflower. What can go wrong?
Cauliflower, exactly.
You're listening to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, you're back in the Hot Stove Society kitchen on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas. What are you eating, Chef?
You're hearing the sound of something made with cauliflower.
Who knew?
I am the chef in the hat.
Chef, that's Chef Rotaro. And once again, our crack production team has decided to torture us, Chef Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time they did this, they made us eat four or five different colors of mac and cheese, all made from Cheetos.
Correct. I do remember that still.
I know. It's like you can't get the stain off your face. You have a big
orange.
It's the gift
that keeps on giving.
You have a big orange smile.
Yeah. I always say, when I'm done with all this stuff, I always go, why?
Why? And the good news is, it's so rare, you can't buy it. Like, I don't know if you remember, but Amy paid 10 times retail.
Yeah.
Like, who's the fool
30
here?
Bucks for a box
of... Is the fool us for eating it, or is the fool one of our producers for paying 10 times retail?
You know what I
retail?
Say? Bravo to marketing on that one.
Whatever. Anyway, Madeline, you have decided to torture us again. You've just plopped down in front of us. You and Amy have 9 different items, and I'm assuming that they're all made from cauliflower.
Yeah. This is our favorite thing to do, is torture you, by the way.
Great. I love that.
And I also want to make note that how many comments from your listeners have you received, Tom, about that Cheeto segment?
Did we get any comments?
You got a lot. You told me that you got a lot of comments. So we're back to torture you. Okay. I'm going to pass this over to Amy because she is the cauliflower substitute expert. Substitute teacher, Amy. Yes.
All right. Amy, by the way, is the dreamer in our company. She takes our ideas, concepts, and thoughts and turns them into realities.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. What have you been concocting here?
Well, when we were talking about how we were going to torture you this week, this is actually not torture to me, the cauliflower part of it.
The craze.
It's going strong. I love it. I love substituting things with cauliflower.
Why not just eat the things? Like, you have cauliflower, it looks like tater tots here. Why not just eat tater tots?
Well, that is an interesting question, and this is why I wanted to bring it, because you can just eat the delicious cauliflower as it is, roasted with tahini. Mm-hmm. Sounds so delicious. Mm-hmm. But then I tried experimenting with baking, making pizza dough, which is so delicious. Maybe I should actually bring that for you next
time. Well, are you gluten-free? Is that why you're interested in it?
No, I just love eating vegetables, and I love trying things, and I also love products. I love going to the stores and buying all of the ridiculous products that people are into.
Kind of like how they're merchandised to you and
yes.
the whole.
So you probably do the opposite of me. I shop on the outside, you shop on the inside.
Yeah. I just like looking at the packaging and all of it. So.
All right. So you have 9 things here. What do we have? And you got to be fairly quick about it. We're going to put these pictures online, by the way. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with my favorite. This is by Outer Isle. These are Plant Power Sandwich Thins. And this is from my own freezer at home. I love to eat this with avocado. Nice little avocado toast. But the ingredients are amazing. This is fresh cauliflower, whole caged eggs, Parmesan, milk, salt, and nutritional yeast.
Huh. And so what I like about it, it is crisp, but I could envision myself... I mean, you did like an avocado sandwich, but I could envision this with a ham and cheese sandwich.
Totally.
Too.
Yeah. And you're just trying everything plain. Uh-huh. Nothing is seasoned, so you can enjoy it.
It kind of tastes the cut between a thick crepe,
mm-hmm,
and a thin, almost like a pizza crust kind of idea. I mean, it's not There's nothing disgusting
right,
about
I,
this.
I could live with that. I could have a little avocado toast on that.
Yeah.
It feels
okay, good.
Clean and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Next one.
So this is when stuff starts getting interesting.
Episode number one out of nine. This is when stuff gets interesting.
Yeah. This is by Trader Joe's. This is their cauliflower gnocchi. And okay, I have tried this at home a few times, and it has never worked out for me. I tested this last night. I phoned a pro. Her name is Loretta Douglas, who makes this all the time. And she told me, instead of doing the directions on the back, place it in the oven and with a little olive oil for 20 minutes at 425. And it worked.
Yeah. What's number three?
Wait on a minute. Wait. It's a bit gummy for me. Yeah.
It is.
Like,
and
it's got to have rice flour or something like that.
That's the cassava flour. So that is where I think it gets interesting. I really like things where it's more of the vegetable before they start adding cassava or brown rice or tapioca.
So here's what I would do if I was me. I would boil it first, then I would saute it in olive oil after it's dry. Mm-hmm. I would saute it or roast it in the oven with a little bit of olive oil.
I would just not buy it the next time.
Now, number three is Calla Power, and this is an uncured pepperoni pizza.
Oh, and so the pepperoni's not cauliflower. The pepperoni's meat?
Yes, it is meat. It's uncured pepperoni.
So the idea behind this is that it's gluten-free, right?
Yes. Okay. So this is gluten-free.
I don't know about that. I mean, I can't think of one frozen pizza that I love, and so this is in that category. It's fine, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
what's
fine.
What's number four?
Okay, number four, we have some Green Giant veggie tots. Now, this one is interesting because
that's from Madeline back there.
The first ingredient is cauliflower, but the second is wheat flour, so you are getting gluten.
Yeah. What's next?
We have
they're just kind of mushy.
They're mushy.
Yeah.
We have Feel Good Foods 3 Cheese Bites, and this is with cauliflower crust.
So this is intended to take place of like a Tostino's, what are those called? Pizza tots? Pizza rolls?
Correct.
Like a gougère.
Just like a gougère.
Just like a gougère, except not.
I would have to be 3 whiskeys in before I'd eat this.
Yeah.
Those are
nice
terrible.
Little buzz and then some pizza bites.
They're pretty dry.
Yeah.
So the next round looks all crispies.
Okay, so these are crispies. So when you need a little crispy treat without gluten, I thought these were great.
That's my downfall. I eat a bag of potato chips. I can't just eat like a 3 or 6 like Jackie can. I just eat the whole dang bag.
Yeah.
You can eat a whole bag of cauliflower.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's my downfall. This would be interesting to me. But I bet it's got the same... salt issues. I bet it's got the same fat issues.
It probably does.
As potato chips. But let's just go.
Yeah. So this is, these are cauliflower stalks, and this also has cassava flour.
And they're called stalks just because of the shape. They're like little round tubes. Little... They look like some sort of, not penne, because they don't have the sharp edge, but like a tube of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes like something you take to the moon.
To the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of food that would never go bad, never mold.
I had just tried these this morning, maybe with a little guacamole, a really boring football party.
What's the fat on these?
The fat is
it's finishing
7 grams for 24 stalks.
What's the stalks? Give me a break. What's the calorie count?
Like 140 calories.
So that's just like a potato chip. So you're not getting any sort of health side of this.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, because it does finish greasy on your lips.
Yeah.
Now, this one is also from my home. I think these are delicious. This is a cauliflower tortilla chip in sea salt flavor.
This is the best thing here today.
Yeah.
For me, out of the 9 ingredients, this is the cleanest, simplest, and
best good.
Ingredients in the pack.
This also has spinach, broccoli, carrot, tomato, beet, shiitake, and garlic.
Man, they must be cut really small because I don't see any of that.
That's what all those little black dots are. So this is, I'm guessing that all that spinach and everything is a dried powder that they kind of toss these chips in, these cauliflower tortilla chips into that vegetable powder.
Yes.
Right. And what is the seed in there? Is that like an onion seed or?
Chia.
Chia seed?
Yes, it is chia seed.
Chia seeds, okay. All right. Those are edible.
Those are edible.
Yeah, those are good.
But what's the calorie count on those?
The calorie count is 140 for 10 chips.
Oh, so that's 1.4.
Oh, man. You would have like 1,000 calories by the time I got started on that. No wonder why they're good.
Now, here is another one that I just tried. These are pretzels. And
no, they're not.
Yeah.
They look like it. They look like pretzels.
We'll keep the name brand off of this one.
Why?
have you tried it yet?
Just tell us.
This is from the ground up. And this has cassava flour, cauliflower, but canola oil, salt, vegetable blend. There's a really funky flavor in there. I'm not really sure what that one is, but
I think so that's
this is one I would have.
You're not endorsing these yourself.
I'm not endorsing the pretzels. So I am endorsing the
chips. I thought
everything
here are things that you liked. But
no,
I'm glad to know you're not endorsing these.
Yeah, no, the ones that my favorite, the first, the toast, and the chips.
Okay.
So last but not least.
Those are, I mean, Chef, what do you think?
Fine. I mean.
Really?
To me, if you're eating this, well, I mean, if I had to choose, I would definitely eat a real pretzel, you know, fresh. But, I mean, this is definitely edible in terms
crispy,
dry. And I think the flavor you're not accustomed to is something in the background that's a little bit overcooked, like overbaked, like almost like a chickpea or cauliflower.
Cauliflower, yeah.
Over-roasted. Right.
Thanks for letting us torture you.
Yeah.
It's our favorite segment. And if you guys have ideas.
Giddy. They thought, oh, Tom's going to hate this. They were all giddy about it.
You want, I'll tell you one thing. Do the same thing with beets.
Beets. If you have an idea to torture Tom and Terry, please send us an email to hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com. We will take it into consideration.
You know, I'm a pretty trashy eater. It's Terry that you're really torturing. I know you like to think it's me, but Terry's the guy that's never even.
Do you know what?
When this he goes by this stuff in the grocery store, it's like he's whistling. He's doing his Julia Child impersonation. It's like he doesn't even look. I must say
it's true. It's a big problem that I have is I never go inside and look at those labels. I think I should do it.
Good.
As an educational, this is very educational to me.
Yeah.
It tells me what I really don't want to eat. I mean, it's cool. It just confirms certain things I know. And
all right. Thank you, Chef. Up next, our food for thought, tasty trivia on the Hot Stove Society radio show, Cairo 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society radio show. We're happy that you've joined us. It's time for our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Are you feeling it today, Chef?
I am very much feeling it today, which probably means that I'm going to lose.
Well, good, because you were perfect last week.
Well, you know, that happens sometime.
Yeah. We've invited Chef Bridget Charters here from the Hot Stove Society virtual classes, one of our instructors, to join us and to be our next victim.
Hi, guys.
Bonjour, Bridget. Don't listen to him. He might not be a victim. She's pretty good.
Oh, my God. I'm rusty, though.
All right. Today's Tasty Trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, my handcrafted versatile rubs, sausages, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetables. You can find them at your local grocery store like QFC, Met Markets, the Town and Country Markets, all sorts of places. They are lovely. I'll just say so myself.
They are lovely.
Also,
you should
many
put that on the
shops,
label.
Many butcher shops have us too. You can find them online also at tomdouglas.com/shop. Okay, Madeline, tell us the rules.
Well, I know we still have a little bit of a flavor of cauliflower left, I think, in most of our mouths, but we're going to continue that theme and eat your veggies. So today's prize pack from our Rub With Love team includes shallot mustard, a veggie rub, and a mushroom rub called Eat Your Veggies is what they're doing.
Oh, nice.
And today you three are playing for our listener, Russell Nash, who
lovely.
Sent in some fun stuff. So we're playing for him. Thierry, you are up first.
Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Which of these is not a type of mushroom? King oyster, chicken of the woods, tiger's tail, or lion's mane?
Tiger's tail.
Correct. One. What is the...
Maddie always looks at us when we get one right thing. And when she's making the test, she's thinking, they're not going to get this one. And then when we get it, she's so disappointed.
It's true. I get very disappointed. What is the German word for store and is also the name we give to a light beer?
German word for store.
And Pilsner? No, that would be... That would make no sense. Let me see. Store would be...
God Warehouse. That's a church.
Weyerhauser.
No.
Something Warehouser.
The answer is lager.
Oh, lager, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. You would have thought.
All right. What temperature should you not exceed when melting chocolate?
116.
120 is what
it's
I
actually
found.
116. Thank 116. You very much.
Okay, I'll give you a half a point on that. We'll correct Felicia.
Half a point? Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on who's
correct.
We'll
look it up. We might get a whole point. We'll look it up.
Blueberries are native to which continent, Thierry?
I think here, from the United States.
I'll give you that. North America.
Yeah.
Is.
Well, that's not a continent. Sorry, the United States is not a continent.
Just going to say, chef.
Sometimes we think it is. So yeah, it gets us in trouble.
Some people think it is.
Okay. And our last question for all three of you in each of your rounds will be around the lovely cauliflower. So did you know that cauliflower can come in four different colors other than white? What are the three colors you can find it in?
Okay, purple, yellow, and green.
Correct. I'll give you yellow as orange. I know, maybe we'll say, but yes, purple, green, and orange are the other colors that you can find it in. And in fact,
what color is it? Creamsicle. Oh, it's orange. It's not yellow, is it? It's orange.
It's right. That's true.
What color is
their creamsicle?
What color is an orange? Oh, it's orange. It's not yellow. It's an orange.
Bitter. Okay, Bridget, you're up next.
I am bitter.
Just like cauliflower.
Mm-hmm. It looks like Thierry got
3.5.
3.5, correct.
3.5. Oh, you guys are given half points now.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah.
We still haven't verified.
I'm a trophy mom. Everybody gets a little bit of points here. All right. Are you ready, Bridget?
I am ready. Go ahead.
Which year did the Great British Bake Off first appear on television?
No, I want to say 2018.
Oh, it's 2010. Oh,
no. Yeah, I was going to say 10.
Wow.
10 years. It's been 10 years. They're celebrating.
When you're as old as Bridget, 10 years is a long time. So
a long time. That's okay.
Ouch.
All right. Which of the following ingredients is not part of the list of Worcestershire sauce ingredients? Tamarind, anchovies, molasses, or tomatoes?
Tomato.
That is correct. Well done. Okay, third question here. What type of flowers produce vanilla pods?
Orchids.
Correct. Well done. Okay, you're 2 for 3 here. What is the main vegetable ingredient of moussaka? Which is one of my favorite dishes, by the way.
Moussaka.
Moussaka. Eggplant. Correct. Oh my gosh, Thierry.
She's on a roll.
She's on a roll.
She's coming. She's coming. I can feel her.
All right, and your cauliflower question is, the cauliflower is a member of the same vegetable family as kale, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, and which other popular vegetable?
Broccoli.
That is correct.
Did we say Brussels sprouts?
We'll get, yeah. We got your broccoli. That is correct.
Oh, she got 4 out of 5.
Ooh, Tom.
Beat me, Bridget.
Are you ready?
Okay.
I don't know if I'm ready or not. Last week I got crushed.
Yeah, no half points for Tom. That's actually the only rule. Okay.
Yes, he can get a half point.
That's so funny.
All right, your first question. Shirley, Alyssa Craig.
Don't
and
call me Shirley.
Mr. Snipe. Sorry, let me start over. Shirley, Alyssa Craig, and Mr. Stripey are all types of what?
Beets.
Melon. Tomatoes.
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 Tomatoes. Gazpacho.
Fine.
Which tree of the laurel family produces a pear-shaped fruit used as a vegetable and usually eaten raw?
Of the laurel family, chayote.
No, an avocado.
Oh.
Okay.
She's like, so.
How does paella get its name, Tom?
I think it has something to do with oars in Spain swimming around a big paella pan.
No, it's paella is actually the word that means paella pan from the town in Spain. So it's a frying pan.
I was mostly right.
Yeah, we'll give paella you a half point there.
Soccer mom.
Okay.
What kind of oranges that are the color
yellow
orange?
Ones. Yellow ones.
What kind of oranges are used to make traditional marmalade?
What are those? What's the town in Spain called
Valencia.
With a V? Valencia oranges.
You're close. It's Sevilla orange.
Oh. Sevilla orange. Yeah.
Due to the high naturally
right
occurring levels of pectin in the fruit.
Yeah.
All right, your cauliflower question. Mark Twain famously said, a cauliflower is nothing but a blank with a college education.
It's nothing but a blank. It's nothing but a basketball.
Cabbage.
Cabbage.
Oh, 0 for 5.
That's too bad.
Sad. I know, he has a half a point. He had a half a point.
Oh, that's right, a half a point. Sorry.
She is way too happy about it.
I know. She's enjoying that moment.
Who won and what did they win?
So Russell Nash is who you will be sending our Eat Your Veggie 3-pack from the team at Rub With Love. That includes a jar of our shallot mustard, veggie rub, and mushroom rub. So thank you, Russell, for listening. And good thing Tom has a shipping department.
And if you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook, our Hot Stove Society radio show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team, Madeline Dow Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Mark Goodnow from the Production Foundry. And editor is Sean Don't Call Me Dottori. Remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a fabulous weekend.